call the Legacy Fund and Budget Stabilization Advisory Board together. The clerk will take the roll.
Representatives, Chairman Kempinick?
Here.
Kreitz?
Here.
Senators Quine?
Here.
Dotsenrod? Mr. Hardmeyer?
Here.
Mr. Morissette?
I'm Jeff Larches, sitting in for Joel.
And Mr. Rauschenberger?
Here.
Mr. Chairman, you have a
quorum. Okay. Well, committee, second, third item is a consideration of the minutes. We got, the June 26th meeting, and then the July 26th was the that Callan College meeting, and we didn't really have a formal get together, so we'll have to have approval of the minutes. Okay. Great, I guess. And is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Hardmeyer.
Let me get you in the book.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Okay. Is all in favor, say aye. Of minutes. All against, nay. Motion carries. Okay. Next item, we got Dave. Do you want to come up and kind of fill us in where you're at on this? And
good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. So I'm going to give an update on the Legacy Fund and Budget Stabilization Fund. I'm going to start off with the Budget Stabilization Fund first. Happy to take any questions along the way. I do have a bit of a sore throat. I apologize if my voice is not as good as usual. So on page four, we have an overview of the Budget Stabilization Fund. It's a pretty straightforward 100% allocation of short-term fixed income. As of September 30th, 2019, we had $669 million outstanding. On page five, we highlight returns as of September 30th for the 1, 3, and 5 years period ended September 30th, 2019. For the 1 year period ended, it generated a return of 5.08%, slightly exceeding its policy benchmark. Over the last 3 and 5 year periods, generated a return of more what you would expect from a short-term fixed income account, more closer to 2%. The reason for the big pickup in returns in the Budget Stabilization Fund over the past year is just what's happened in the short-term rate environment. We had four rate hikes in 2018 by the Fed that kind of pushed rates up, but then in 2019 we actually had three rate cuts. And when you have that kind of that type of volatility, including the rates coming down in 2019, including most recently on October 31st, it sets up well for nice returns. We should not expect to generate a 5% return long term on the Budget Stabilization Fund given the current rate environment, but happy when we experience as we did over the past year.
Any questions, committee? Go ahead,
Dave. The next page just highlights, again, it's relatively simple, straightforward asset allocation. Most of the funds are invested with J.P. Morgan and Barings, although we do have about $5.4 million invested with Northern Trust and about $4.7 million with the Bank of North Dakota. Just to cover fees, so for the fiscal year ended June 30th, 2019, total investment fees and expenses for the Budget Stabilization Fund was 0.16%. That's consistent with fiscal year 2018 of 0.16%. On an absolute basis, the dollars increased by doubling, but again, it's just a function of significantly more assets again. So pretty low fees overall, but to spend 0.16% to earn 5% last year is wonderful, but not to be expected going forward. So
any questions?
Mr. Chairman, if it no questions on the Budget Stabilization Fund, I'll hop to the Legacy Fund.
Just a second, Dave. I just want to, as long as we're, before we go there, how long, when the last time we used the Budget Stabilization Fund, what did it took the better part of a year to expend that money out? And that stayed in the investment, didn't it, until it was used?
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, so the Budget Stabilization Fund is invested in short-term fixed income. It is very liquid, and it can be redeemed in relatively short notice. So The amount of time that I think between it was communicated by OMB and when we actually drawn it was probably less than a 3 to 6 month time frame. It's just, it's super liquid. It's high quality.
Yeah.
It's there to be a rainy day fund, to be
no,
capped.
No, and right? that's what, because that's, but that, like you said, though, it wasn't something that we needed to access, because,
no.
You know, I mean, as soon as we realized there was a shortfall, so it can, you said about 6 months and stuff is about as long as it took to get the assets unwound or get it back into the circulation again.
That is correct, Mr. Chairman. We could do it quicker than that. That's just a nice,
okay.
It's nice to be able to manage it in that time frame.
Excuse me.
And I don't, Dave or the chairman, where are we at with that dollar figure now in that, have we, because there's a cap, right? We capped that at, the new cap is a little higher than the old cap.
But, yeah, it's just, well, we got 700 and just under 660, you know, with the 150 some million went in from the earnings into the budget stabilization fund, and then with the ending fund balance and stuff, we're 600 and some odd.
Yes.
Yeah, if we got it right away.
So
go on. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, so we have, as shown on this one page, we had $669 million as of September 30th. I know last legislative session there was a motion or a bill that had passed that effectively increased the amount.
Yeah.
I know we're approaching that amount.
Yeah.
15% is
yeah,
a percentage of the budget.
The general fund. Yeah.
And I think it's a little shy of $700 million.
That's
in,
what I was
in absolute
thinking.
Terms.
I wasn't sure.
Okay.
Because it.
Mr. Chairman, so when it reaches its cap, then is it my understanding that all of the investment and interest income at that point flow back to the general fund?
Yeah.
Because it can't grow statutorily
yep.
beyond its yep. limit, right?
Yep. 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 Yeah, it's, like I said, you know, we got there without, I mean, that was one of the concerns during the session was how do you start putting money back into that again, and I think I know the House Appropriation Chairman, we had conversations, and I know there was a lot of ifs and buts and stuff on it, and I think that was kind of the intent, though, was to get that back to a level that was something where we didn't have to take general fund spending to get there and stuff on it, and so that's the way it's working out. But yeah, it's just under 700, if I remember right.
Mr. Chairman, it looks like the maximum balance that can be in there is 726,500.
Okay, 726. Okay.
And 83 cents.
There you go.
Pay those pennies.
Yeah. Well, a penny a day for a month, it's compounded, get a lot of money. It is. So.
In there.
Huh?
That'll balance the budget.
Yeah. So, anyways, any other questions?
Thank you.
Okay, Dave, go ahead.
Very good. I'm going to push forward then to the legacy fund. So this is the legacy fund's asset allocation. As of September 30th, 2019, there was about $6.3 billion in the legacy fund. As you can see, we're very close to our targets, generally within 0.1 to 0.2%. We probably had a little bit higher amount in cash in the legacy fund as of September 30th, probably because we're positioning to invest the money in the private markets. But again, as you recall, dating back to 2013 and 2015, originally we were 100% invested in short-term fixed income. We completed our transition in January 2015 to our current asset allocation, 30% U.S. equities, 20% international equities, so a total of 50% in equities, public equities, 35% in fixed income, and then 15% in diversified real assets, including 5% in core real estate. So that's our current actual asset allocation, which is consistent with our target. On page 13, we highlight returns as of September 30th, 2019. For the quarter ended September 30th, we generated just a return of a little over 1%, pretty much in line with our benchmark. On a calendar year-to-date basis, so for the 9 months ended September 30th, 2019, the legacy fund is up about 12.3%. Again, that's just a function of the very strong equity markets. The S&P 500 was up over 20% in the first 9 months of the year. again, very close to our benchmark. For the 1 year ended September 30th, 2019, we actually trailed our benchmark by about 1%. More importantly, for the 3 and 5 years ended September 30th, 2019, we've outperformed our benchmarks. For the 3 years ended September 30th, 2019, we generated a return of about 7%. And for the 5 years ended September 30th, 2019, we generated a return of about 6.3%. So again, just goes to show that we've been fortunate to have good active management over the last 5 years. Not so much over the last year, but over the past 5 years. And that outperformance has generated about $100 million in excess return for the legacy fund for the 5 years ended September 30th, 2019. I'll just pause if there's any questions on that.
Any questions, committee?
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
So, Dave, how do you... with this low interest rate environment that we're in and, you know, concern about stocks, this policy benchmark of, what, 5.68%?
Yes.
How do you feel about that short run, long run?
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Mr. Hartmeyer, over the long term, feel pretty comfortable with it because I think over the next 10 to 20 years as the markets will continue to show going forward. I think we've got a good growth opportunity here in the U.S., probably less so in the international markets, but still strong overall with good global GDP growth opportunities. Again, we're long-term investors. We work with Callan and our advisory board and state investment board to make sure we have a disciplined, reasonable approach. To have a 5.6 to 5.8% return target over the next 10 to 20 years is a reasonable expectation based upon our current asset allocation. It's less aggressive than some other types of sovereign wealth funds that are out there that are trying to shoot for more like 7 to 8%. It's a little bit more challenged in this rate environment, particularly given the strength of the public equity markets over the past year, if not 5 to 10 year period. So I think it's a reasonable expectation, and I have a high degree of confidence that we'll achieve it over the long term. And when we do our work with our actuaries and with our consultants, they seem to support it as well. So,
okay. Thank you.
Absolutely. Yeah,
and committee, Dave, and yeah, we can get into this a little later and stuff on it, but that's one of the things that was like at the earnings. I know there's been, we're trying to sell them on this averaging the earnings, you know, and, you know, so we do fit this mold here and stuff, because last session got to be a little frustrating because I think the spending would like to been at the 12% instead of the 6%, and that's problematic if you get into, you know, if you get into that. So that's one of the things I know the earnings, I know SIB has been pushing, you know, to educate, I should say, the committee, and we got to work on other legislators too to try to get some type of an averaging put together on these earnings, because it we are long term, and you can't chase if this gets political trying to these earnings, that could get very tough, you know, because that's been the conversation, you know. I mean, some are going, you look at some of these other funds, they are, you know, they're 2-3% higher, but then they're a lot more, and if it goes the other way, it goes the other way a lot faster too. And that's been, I think, one of the concerns we've had. That was the first year and a half of you were on the board, and I think Gary and Jerry, and we were sitting on it, you know, because didn't want to spend anything, you know, and that gets problematic too. So, but go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, no, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, I think it's a great point to emphasize that the earnings volatility of the legacy fund is significant because we have a 50% equity allocation. To think you're going to punch out 5.6 to 5.8% every month is just, that's an unrealistic expectation. But over the long term, we can achieve that. But that's the reason why we want to use kind of the percentage of market value approach to get more of a smoothing approach to establishing our earnings going forward for budgeting purposes. The only thing that is certain is that there's no way we can foretell what's going to happen in the future, particularly over defined short periods of time. We feel much better given 10 to 20 year kind of return expectations. So,
go ahead, Mr.
So, just to pick up on your point, Chairman Kempinick, so what you're talking about, and I think we've talked about that here before, is mm-hmm. that we would go to a definition of earnings as a percentage of earning assets.
Yeah.
Of pick a number, 4 or 5%.
Yeah. Over, yeah. Then instead how many years, of the, you know.
Today we're looking at.
Well, we're
interest
year to
income,
year.
Yep. Realized yep. gains.
Yep. Yep. Yep.
Whatever else is in that.
Yep. Whatever comes at June 30th.
Realized gains and losses.
June 30th, you're throwing the dart. You know, I mean, it worked out this last year. You know, a year ago at this time, we were looking at below $200 million of, you know, defined earnings of how we defined it.
Right.
And we went into session, you know, there was speculation from $200 million that we were going to have a tough time just meeting what we already spent to $500, $600 million. You know, I mean, there was people saying we were going to be at a billion, you know, it's, you know, I mean, they, you know, everybody's picks their flavor, whatever they want to champion, but it, you can't do that, you know, and that was the problem we were running into is there was some bills that were in play last session that needed $450 million plus to make work, and you can't do that, you know, you can't do that, and so that's what, you know, and that's, we got to try to get, because that's going to be the big challenge is to get this out of the political arena, you know, that we start setting, you know, we can say we want $500 million. Well, you know, if right. you don't have anything to back that up, you know, you put that in and spend it and, you know, and it doesn't happen, you know, that's going to be a problem. And so we got to get where we're and we did this session, at least we were a little more disciplined. We spent $100 million more than what we had, but we didn't pre-spend it like we did in 17. We spent $300 million that went into the general fund, basically, and then the rest of the earnings, the 155, went into the ending fund balance, and then the ending fund balance, whatever was over 65 million, went into the budget stabilization fund, and so that's how we get to the numbers we're at.
So who defines earnings? I mean, is that
that's,
and maybe I asked this before, but is this does that take legislation to go
that's
from the previous methodology that we just described yep. to a flat yep. percentage?
Yep, yep, yep. We got to, because we've got it. The Constitution's quiet on earnings, and so in this, before this ever became a question, we did originally, the bill that we had in was just basically interest and dividend. You know, it was just, but the Senate, the problem was there, though, it didn't generate enough money, so the Senate put the gain, you know, the realized and unrealized gains in it and stuff on it, and that creates a whole nother conversation of how to access that. And so that's where, you know, you start playing with stuff you don't know, you know, you can right. change it quite a bit, and you're trying to generate X, you know, pick a number, and it gets very tough to do. And that's where, if we don't get something done, we're going to keep chasing, you know, this number, you know, every session will get like chasing oil numbers, you know, and it's pretty tough to budget on it, because if something does happen, which, you know, the law of averages, you know, is going to happen at some point. And if we're spending 500, we want to spend $500 million a year, and she's only making 350, you know, on a running average of say 4 or 5 years, you're going to be awful disappointed, or somebody's going to be awful disappointed. It is when it doesn't show up. So it's just an education process. I think most reasonable people will understand that. It's just, we got to have a little broader conversation about it.
So,
go ahead, Dave.
So, Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Chairman, if I may, one quick question on the 4%. Is the 4%, just for my sake, is that pulled from some of the other funds that the State Investment Board handles? Is there another fund that uses that 4% kind of rolling average?
Well, land board, I think they're at 5%, though. There's different.
Or land
Alaska,
board. Sorry.
Alaska, I think, Dave, you probably speak to yep. this better. Alaska's got a, they're doing kind of the same thing, and they got a reserve fund that they kind of mirror if they don't spend it. So, and that's truthfully what we should probably be looking at, too. But
that's something, well, this board's got to get into it because we should be making recommendations on this issue too, but it's something that we got to think out here over the next year, because I'd like to have, out of this committee, I'd like to have this time next year recommendation too. The SIB has adopted to move towards this. They haven't put anything down, you know, I mean, there's no set number, but they want this concept to move forward, I think, too, so it's...
And my, I guess my only follow-up to that, and it's not my call, my only observation is 4% may not be the magic number, but once that's in statute, who says they don't move that to 30% in a future legislature, and what's constitutional versus not constitutional? That's big my question, is that you have a low earnings environment, traditional earnings as it's defined now, and you're spending 4%. Who makes the argument that that's, who says that's not actually dipping into principle and not getting a two-thirds vote? So that would be one of my concerns when I heard that. I just, something that we need to think about to avoid any future obstacles. I think it's absolutely the financially sound way to go, and it's more predictable, but I think we need to be careful about there being opening up loopholes for people to abuse it in the future by going with a rolling average in statute, not constitutional. Who says it's not 30 or 40%? If we can put in 4 of a rolling average, who says somebody in the future can't say it's 30%, and then that's a simple majority spending 30% of a rolling average of the legacy fund.
And Mr. Chairman and Mr. Rauschenberger, you're, and that's why we need to think this through, you know, I mean, just get in, because the devil's in the details of how this would work. The biggest, you know, and yeah, a person could. The biggest thing is there's an education process in all of this, because, like I said, I tried on the House side, and it kind of got squashed just because it wasn't going to give enough money out. And so that's one of the challenges I think we have when we have this, and we've kind of talking to different people here and listening to Mr. Teal that was at that earnings meeting from the Alaska Permanent Fund. What was kind of interesting was we're kind of in the same boat as Alaska in some ways, because we've already dedicated, I mean, they've got their big issue is those individual dividends, and that's where they're running into trouble, and they've as their earning curve though has dropped off, and that's one of the things he questioned our sanity of why we're spending any earnings right now, because we're still on the upswing on oil production yet and stuff on it. So but we are where we are. The thing is that we're kind of getting into a mandated spending environment too with local political subdivisions. You know, you look at what we at the end of that earnings meeting in Fargo here a couple of weeks ago, Alan Knutson splashed some cold. That should have been the first conversation instead of the last conversation of that meeting, but we're dragging along a $700 million hole yet from basically the 15-17 budget that we didn't, you know, and then 17-19 it didn't get filled, you know, that's when it showed up, but we've been using oil money to paper over, basically SIF money and stuff, but it's oil money, it's pretty soft money to paper over ongoing spending. And Alan indicated, I thought we made a little ground, but he indicated we didn't make any ground really this last session. And he indicated that if something don't change, the curve don't change somewhat, we could be looking at $900 to $1 billion of oil money going into general fund spending instead of the $300 million. So we've got some issues out. We got money, you know, but it's just how, you know, we've got some ongoing, and a lot of it does come back to what's gone on. We've taken over social services. We've taken over good chunk of the K-12 funding, which isn't a problem, but the problem is you don't pull that back anymore, you know, and it is, because if you ever did, it'd affect individuals, you know, and that's, so we've already got a mandated spending problem in the state that we're gonna have to deal with. And, you know, this is just part of the, Senator Wardner's got a, you know, he's looking more at infrastructure type with this type of stuff, and which we probably should, but the problem is that this is probably more stable than trying to spend $1 billion of oil money that they could you know, I mean, right now, I've talked to operators out there, and it is not, it's a challenging environment right now for quite a few of these, you know, I mean, it, and so it isn't, it, it's, this thing could go one way or the other. You really don't know, and that's why it gets kind of precarious that we get into these conversations. But like what you said, we got to think this through on this, you know, the holes or stuff we could fall into, that's for sure. Go ahead.
And I'll just clarify, Mr. Chairman, I'm absolutely in favor of more of a rolling average, longer term, you know, more stable 4% rolling average definition of earnings. It was just more of what does that, does it create other problems? I'm absolutely in favor of it, but I just want to make sure that we've contemplated all of the potential pitfalls that might come along with it.
No, we got to get more details.
Okay. Go ahead, Senator.
And since we're totally off track,
yeah.
You know, the folks who attended that meeting in Fargo, it was certainly, you know, the Alan Knutson presentation, which is available, I believe. I would, if you go ask him, I have a copy.
There's a link provided, Senator, on that.
Okay, because it's just, he goes, he starts in the 80s, he works his way all the way to now, and, yeah. And you know, oh yeah, there is the revenue. Oh, but there's the expenditures. Certainly interesting lines, which after listening to 30 presentations of how we should spend the money, you know, there is some, it's going to be interesting to see how we are able to roll into that and still come away with a balanced budget and still taking care of the needs and using the earnings wisely. I think the Alaskan presentation I thought was awesome. I never heard that before, but he was he's kind of sobering. You know, he tells it. He's lived it. He's been there 27 years with the fund. He's seen what they've done right, what they've done wrong, and what they're still continuing to do wrong. And it's just an eye-opening experience. And some of the comments when he suggested, why are you spending it now? You aren't in an oil downturn yet, made sense. Why are you thinking about income tax? If you're gonna do it, take it out of the 70%, don't take it out of the earnings. I mean, there's a lot, it was a lot of comments, but once again, Alaska has eliminated their income tax. They have no place to go other than the oil revenue to fund 95% of their budget. Yep. The schools are hurting now, the university system, everything in Alaska, but everybody still gets their $3,000 in October.
Yeah.
And then the incidence of alcohol, drugs,
oh, yeah.
And whatever. There's three things you rattled off that we're not proud of in Alaska.
Worker participation is lowest in any state in the country. It is.
Anyway, just that was more of a comment. Dave, I think you were there. I think our treasurer was there, and were you there the night before when the folks
yes.
were kind of having fun with us?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, that was
yes.
good too.
So, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, just to address a couple of the points that got raised. So. And we were asked, Retirement Investment Office were asked to reach out to other U.S. sovereign wealth funds to learn from their experience. And RVK, which is an investment consultant, actually the land board, actually did a survey just very recently, and they surveyed the top actually 10 to 15 funds. And here's the ranking of them. Alaska Permanent Fund, so literally 10 times the size of ours and been around for 40 years. Also happens to use Callan as their general investment consultant. But that set the table for us learning from them and reaching out to Mr. David Teal, who's their legislative finance director, who gave a lot of great insights. But just to address some of the questions, such as the 4 or 5%, how do you get that magical 4 to 5% number? Most endowments and foundations use what they try to establish as a sustainable spending rate. So if you're trying to have something into perpetuity, you want to adjust for inflation so you keep real earnings available. And if we have a, for lack of a better term, let's just say a simple 6% long-term return expectation, and we assume inflation is 2%, 6 minus 2, you believe you can spend a 4% trailing market value. When we surveyed other U.S. sovereign wealth funds, or should I say when RVK surveyed it, they looked at, most of them are using a percentage of market value approach. Most of them are using a 5% approach. And actually, that's what's used by the North Dakota Common Schools Trust Fund. But there was a one that also used a 4%. I do think it's probably a bit more conservative, and when you consider the infancy of the legacy fund overall, it's probably good as much as possible to stay on the lower end of that. But that's something for other folks to decide, quite candidly. But needless to say, a 4 to 5% kind of spending rate is very common. It's a best practice kind of that approach, and doing it on a percentage of market value perspective. So I just want to touch base on that just so people understand kind of what is the percentage of market value approach. So if you adopt it over a trailing 5-year basis, so if you look at the screen here, just keeping real simple round numbers, you go back 5 years and you say the average value of the fund was 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 billion. Now these are just fictitious numbers, but just to keep the number and math very straightforward, the average would have been $6 billion over the last 5 years. Multiply it times 4%, that's $240 million.
On page 30.
Page 30, excuse me. And then multiply it times 2 years, so that's $480 million. So a fairly straightforward analysis. And again, it's based upon trailing data that's available. The biggest risk that we take when we have our current earnings definition is we end legislative session, hopefully in April or May, and we don't even know what our legacy fund earnings number is, and that's a huge risk. If you have a big downturn, it could just really cause you to have kind of budget issues. But if we base it upon a trailing 5-year, and in this instance, and I actually just for lack of, no other reason to give an example, if you look at the sentence here, for purposes of Section 26 of Article 10 of the Constitution of North Dakota, the current definition of earnings is net income in accordance with generally accepted accounting principles, excluding any unrealized gains or losses. If you were to insert, pick the right number, be it 4 or 5% or less, perhaps 3%, but just assume 4% of the average ending net position of the legacy fund, again, in accordance with generally accepted accounting principles, over the 5 prior fiscal year ends, prior to the current biennium, you would know what your budget number is heading into the biennium. So if we based it upon June 30th, 2020, and we're heading into legislative session in January of 2021, we'd have that number. And it just improves transparency and improves awareness. It's a common approach used by the Alaska Permanent Fund. It's used effectively by the North Dakota Common Schools Trust Fund. And it really eliminates a lot of undue risk kind of associated with not having an earning number that you can rely upon until you're actually already into the current biennium. So just pause for a second, see if that makes sense. I do have the actual numbers here that I could go through if you'd like as well.
Dave, I'm having a hard time looking at you. I know you're struggling hard to talk with
okay.
your throat, but I just wanted to follow up on Ryan's point, though. Yep. I mean, if we have a downturn like we saw in 2008-09, you have negative returns.
Yes.
And we're spending 4%. How do we get around the constitutional issue of not spending principal? I mean, I think that was exactly the point.
So,
no matter what.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, so this is a summary. So this is page 26. This shows total net earnings highlighted in green from inception. So you can see since inception, this is through September 30th, we've generated almost $1.5 billion of earnings as defined by generally accepted accounting principles. That's something I think we could disclose on our financial statements at our retirement investment office for the legacy fund and say, here's what inception to date earnings are. And we can always, I think people are very familiar in understanding what the distribution was. So we could always make people aware of what are earnings from inception to date and how much was distributed. So you see $455 million is distributed. So you could keep track of that. And hopefully, there would create awareness and understanding if we ever end up in that situation where we're trying to pierce the veil going from earnings expenditures or distributions to principal. Does that make sense?
Possibly.
Okay.
And committee, and that is something that we're, because that has been, you know, because if we do lock in and you do start get, you know, the semantics of how this would work out, that is a real possibility on it. And that's one of the or else you'd have a constitutional challenge. Somebody had challenged how that's worded. And that's been one of the problems, though, is when you do, and you were on when we first got into the reading the constitutional language, and it is, there is a lot of, you know, there is some areas where you can make some assumptions and stuff if you wanted to. I think most people would probably frown on that, and I think, you know, and it,
I don't have a problem of, you know, if that's where we want to go, you know, if this committee, you know, like constitutional, get it into the constitutional of definitions and stuff on it. Biggest problem is you got to sell it. And that's where it always, these constitutional measures always gets kind of tough to, it's got to make sense. It does. But it does make sense that we would be controlling, you know, the people would be controlling what the legislature did do. It would, so. Go ahead, Representative Craig.
Mr. Chairman, at this point, 4% is an arbitrary figure, right? I mean, this would go before the legislature. We could determine whatever number or percent we wanted to. Personally, my feeling is I think 4 is a little high. Maybe I'm wrong, but I'd be more comfortable with in a 3% range is what where I would be at. But that's my personal opinion at this point. But
so Mr. Chairman, just members of the board, the whole concept that if you're using the percentage of market value pros, be it 3%, 4%, 2%, whatever the number is, at least it allows us to be transparent, prudent, and consistent in how we do it. So the toughest thing is if we're, you know, Darren and I get called and ask what our legacy fund earnings going to be. And there's no way we know what legacy fund earnings are going to be. If we have this approach, though, a percentage of market value approach, widely used by a lot of folks, a lot of Alaska Permanent Fund, North Dakota Common Schools Trust Fund, many, many other endowments and foundations, you have this approach that you can use. And then the appropriate bodies can decide, is the number 2, 3, 4, or whatever percentage should be. But just so you know, there is, I want to just caution, the 4% isn't just literally picked out of the air. It's like, what is our return expectation? And our return expectation is about 6%. If we assume, and this is assumption, a 2% inflation rate, we have a 6 minus 2 is 4%. That's a real spending rate that we can have. So although it'd be greater if we did, you know, better off if we did 3% for a long-term fiscal conservatism, that make all the sense in the world, there's a rationale to the approach, if that makes sense.
Well, in committee, you know, like I said, we got to get into this a little deeper, you know, and we will in future meetings. But like Alaska, they got a reserve fund, and truthfully, that's what I tried to present here this spring, was some other, you know, where, because to follow the Constitution, you're picking a number, you know, it says earnings, you know, go into the general fund. Well, the legislature has the ability to pull that money back out, you know, and that's what had happened. All of it would go in, but you don't know when you got June 30th as your date. That's, you know, in a way, in investment world, that's just an arbitrary number. It's a number, though, that is when the next fiscal year begins. So that number becomes problematic because most of these are not real. You don't realize what it is till a month and a half out. So you'd have to put up some other another account, and that would be where you'd probably have where it'd spill over if you did have a downfall. That'd kind of be a shock absorber into what the next year's spending. See, and that's what'll happen this time because the money that's being earned today now is not spent. And so we'll have that ability to start doing that here. You know, there was some learning curve, you know, here 2 years ago, because technically it was available on the 17th, 2017, but in realistic, it was 2019. And so, but at least the legislature didn't pre-spend this next go around and stuff on it. But well, in a way we have, though, because we got a deficit that we're filling up with other soft money. And so, you know, you can take it however, but I think we're at least gave ourselves some options anyways here going into this next session and stuff on it to come up with some solutions that'll be more long term. And that's what we got to think through, you know, because it is a long term, and I hope we treat it like that, because I think we did last year, we did kind of, if we started dipping into the principal, it don't last long. When you start spending the cost to it, I think was on 5%, was like $3 billion to the fund, you know, just on, you know, and that's huge. It is. So anyways, that's something that I think we got to work on here this next year.
Very good, Mr. Chairman. So I'm going to just go back to a little bit kind of where we left off. So we do have one manager on watch, that's LSV. I just want to highlight their return. So for the 3 years ended June 30th, 2019, they actually outperformed their benchmark in the U.S. large cap value, but they did underperform over the past 3 years in international equity. They have done better of late. They're more of a value player in the as opposed to a growth investor. They've done well for us over the long term, but they've been a little challenged of late. Having said that, when you focus on our overall returns over the last 5 years, as highlighted on this page, page 15, if you look under the manager effect column, if you look on page 15, manager effect, it's kind of third from the right, you can see that we're generally outperforming our benchmarks, which is great. And the one where we're not is in U.S. large cap, which is the hardest sector to try to beat a benchmark, is in U.S. large cap. But otherwise, we're doing pretty well. We're doing phenomenal in fixed income, but that's probably the easiest area to generate excess return overall. But so again, are there years when we're going to underperform a benchmark? Absolutely, we did it this past year. We're going to judge ourselves over a five-year period because that's just a more reasonable, proven thing to do. And over the last 5 years, we've exceeded our performance benchmarks. The other thing, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, I wanted to touch on is page 17. It's just fees. So fees as a percentage of average assets under management increased from about 0.33 or a third of a percent to about 0.4% over the past year. A function of that is some of our managers doing better and we have performance fees. So to be honest, even though we hate paying fees, if they're outperforming their benchmark, that's a wonderful thing for them to share in that and for us to benefit from that. We also become more invested in kind of infrastructure investments that drove up our real assets. So overall, again, we spent about 0.39% of our assets under management on fees. If you step back and say, how have we done over the past 5 years versus our benchmarks, we've outperformed it by over 0.5%. So we're getting a good return on our investment. So again, there's nothing wrong with spending fees and money on fees if you are getting a good return. And over the last 5 years, the State Investment Board with their manager selection has been able to select managers that have outperformed the benchmarks by about 0.5%, and 0.5% on $4 billion over the last 5 years translates into about $100 million of extra income for the fund. So,
one thing, Dave, I was just going to, the domestic fixed income manager, okay, we're a little, we're obviously a little more aggressive in that than we are with the budget stabilization fund. I'm
assuming
it is and stuff on it. So how does that look against other funds and stuff on that?
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, so is the Mr. Kevin, is the representative Kevin, am I correct? The question is, how are our fees of the legacy fund compared to other U.S. sovereign wealth funds?
Yeah.
Generally, I would say we compare pretty favorably. So we do not have as many private market assets as most other large institutional investors. I shouldn't say all, but yeah, as many significant others. So because we have more, we have a fairly heavy asset allocation of fixed income, which generally has low fees, and the fact that we do use passive management in certain sectors as well. So to have a fee level of less than 0.5% generally compares pretty well to most other U.S. sovereign wealth funds.
Okay. But that's why our returns, though, are, looking at what we've been able to do with that, we're staying above 2% and stuff on it, and that's been one of the challenges, I think, with that has been.
Absolutely, Mr. Chairman. So if you go back and you look at the Budget Stabilization Fund, for the 5 years ended September 30th, 2019, they've generated a 2% return.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
That's the reason why they have significantly lower fees. When you're trying to target, if legacy fund, we've generated over 6%, actually 6.32%. You're going to have to pay more fees in order to generate that higher return because you have more equity assets and more private market assets, if that makes sense.
So
you're paying more fees, but you're getting a significantly higher return, right? The Budget Stabilization Fund only paid 0.16%, but it generated a 2% return over the last 5 years versus the legacy fund over the last 5 years generated 6.3%, slightly in excess of its benchmark of 5.7, but it cost about 0.39%.
Well, I was just, Dave and committee, I was looking on page 15, just looking at the domestic fixed income and just the short term, that doesn't really come, but we're double, we're 4.98, it looks like, is what our returns are this last year anyways and stuff on it, shooting for a 3.3. So
very good.
Committee, okay. Go ahead.
So, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, so that we have the investment policy statement for the legacy fund here. Obviously, in May of 2018 is when we had Callen do an extensive asset allocation study. The board approved this. I just want to highlight and request the board, this board, to approve some changes. So on page 20, and I've highlighted in red, kind of some changes that we made. So I think everyone understands that. On August 23rd, 2019, the State Investment Board approved a $100 million increase in the Bank of North Dakota CD program. It went from $200 million to $300 million. I note that the BND CD investment will represent a sector allocation within the fixed income asset class. The BND will be requested to guarantee a minimum 1.75% investment return. The minimum return requirement and credit spreads to like-term treasuries will be periodically reviewed, and BND CDs are rated AA by S&P. So I would just request, if it so pleases the advisory board, if they have any questions on those changes, it's just documenting kind of the change that we made in a sector allocation within fixed income, where we increased the Bank of North Dakota CD program from $200 million to $300 million.
Do we need a vote on that? I think we did, didn't we? I thought we did at an earlier meeting that we approved it was before it happened, but it...
Yes.
It did. One of the things that I think, Dave, what we needed, and I was going to bring this up with Mr. Hardmar, we've had questions about the investment, I guess maybe we should have the BND bring, at a future meeting, bring up where this stands and stuff on it, because we've had questions about from different legislators about where this is at, because I know they wrinkle their nose, they say, well, I'm not sure what you got out, if it's 50 million or 70, but they, why, I guess, and I mean, you can't get into details, but there is some stuff that could possibly happen. And I think we just, I guess, just, like every, like next summer sometime, have an information at one of these or something where we can get it if somebody wants to dig it up.
So are you looking for a motion now? Do we want to accept this idea?
Well, I guess we can formalize it and stuff if it was brought up. So yeah, I guess we do.
Thank you.
Probably need to formalize it.
If this falls within the our scope of practice,
yes,
what we need to do, I move that we accept this change.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, Senator Klein moved. Representative Crate seconded. Any discussion?
Well, Mr. Chairman, just for discussion, I'd like to hear what this is working for the bank, and maybe. I'm just waiting for all that enthusiasm. That I made the right decision here.
You did,
okay.
Mr. Chairman. Yeah, I'm prepared to talk a little bit about the program and where it is today. But it's always been a little bit of a moving target for us in terms of interest in the program, and it really is a function of the economic development climate within the state. And I understand, some of the criticisms and caution people have had about this program. We've been, as high as probably close to 150, 200 million in terms of usage. We're down now to 40 to 50 million. I think we may have just booked a $30 million deal. And so what we see in front of us today is probably more enthusiasm and interest in the program than I've seen in, maybe 10 years. And I think the likelihood that we're going to start funding some of these is higher than what I've seen before. And so it's conceivable to me that the $300 million, ceiling on this could be reached, soon. So what I think the SIB did was a real good thing. We're appreciative. I think our programming and our ability to deliver those kind of financing programs in collaboration with SIB is important. We don't have, a long-term source of funds with this kind of cost structure. So this is a good thing.
Is there any other questions, committee? And that's, truthfully, and Mr. Hardmar brought it up, is probably the criticism is the economic development angle of it, but it is a secured
loan, basically, to Bank of North Dakota, so it...
It's a deposit.
Our deposit, yeah.
It's all it is, a CD. There's no credit risk that you're taking.
Yeah.
You know, and your CD is backed by the full faith and credit of the state of North Dakota, so you're taking only interest rate risk, is it?
Yeah. And it, you know, and that's in this earnings committee, that's going to be one of the discussions, too, is how to, you know, I'm thinking, you know, listening to different legislators and different people, that we use some of that as something to generate more earnings. You know, I mean, it's something that shouldn't, and it shouldn't be just an expense. It should be something that looked at a little broader, too. So there's a lot of dynamics, I think, going on here when you do have the ability to do some of this stuff. It's just, we don't, it's always... Yeah, you don't want it to sour on you, I guess, is probably the biggest criticism it is, and that's probably it.
So, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, just to emphasize, so this is at a market rate of interest. We ran out to our three largest fixed income managers to make sure that we were basing on a market rate. It's at a credit spread to U.S. Treasuries of like term, which is important. If you read the rest of the investment policy statement, you know, 7G, economically targeted investing is prohibited unless the investment meets the exclusive benefit rules. The next page goes, and you know, it's got to be at a fair market value. It's got to provide the legacy fund with an equivalent or superior rate of return for a similar investment. It's got to make sure you got sufficient liquidity. It's got to have safeguards. It makes all the sense in the world. And just for reference, it's interesting that the Alaska Permanent Fund a couple months ago actually set up something similar. They ask, so if you look on page 35, I apologize for jumping around. Yeah. If you look at page 35, the Alaska Permanent Fund launched an in-state investment program on September 20th of 2019, in which they're recognizing the opportunity to recognize attractive returns. This approach to identifying and supporting kind of targeted returns is done with a risk profile consistent with similar investments outside of Alaska. So they have the same approach. They have to have a market-based investment return. So it's not subsidized investing. It's economically targeted, but it's at a market rate, and that's critically important. It's also interesting that they have a $200 million program on a $67 billion program, and we have a $300 million program from a program size on a 6.7. So I do think from that standpoint it compares well. I apologize for interrupting the motion.
No, well, committee, you know, and that's the thing with all of this. This fund is to look at the future, and when oil does start, you know, and that's eventually it's going to, but even if it doesn't, you know, it's going to go like this and they go like this and stuff. But that's where this fund comes in, as we do broaden our economy out. And that's one of the things that we're seeing right now is that, you know, this hole I talked about earlier is in the broad part of the economy, didn't fill back in what was expected in 15, and Mr. Rauschenberg probably talked more to that. You know, it just that we're at a higher level, but we're not where we were, you know, on that type of spending and stuff on it. So that's kind of the, I think, the theory behind doing some of this. It isn't probably, you know, in scheme of things, it probably isn't a big amount of money, but if you can spend a little here and get something 10 years from now, that's where I think we're kind of looking at.
Okay. Question?
Go ahead.
No.
Oh, question.
Oh, yeah, we didn't vote yet. Any other discussion? Okay, all in favor of accepting the fund going to 300 million in the North Dakota MAPS, Bank of North Dakota MAPS loan certificate program?
I'll say.
Huh? Oh, do we need a roll call?
Representatives, Chairman Kempnick?
Yes.
Kreit?
Yes.
Senators, Vice Chair Klein?
Aye.
Dawson Rod? Mr. Hardmeyer?
I think I should abstain. Okay.
Mr. Morissette?
Yes.
Rauschenberger?
Yes. Oh, yeah. I'll let the auditor get a hold of you.
Yeah.
Okay, the motion passed. Okay, where are we at?
So, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, I'll wrap up here in essence of time. So it's page 26, again, it's just a roll forward from inception to date of deposits and earnings. Just highlighted with a green arrow pointing to the left for the period ended September 30th, 2019. Based upon the current definition, their earnings is $126.7 million. I'll just have everyone note that that includes June of 2019, in addition to obviously July, August, and September. The rest of the information was informational. I do appreciate the opportunity to present and share some of the information from the Legacy Fund and Earnings Committee recently. Again, from an overall perspective, SIB client assets under management as of September 30th, 2019 were about $15.4 billion. Based upon more recent data that we have, we're probably up to about $15.8 billion. With the strong markets, even perhaps with the sell-off taking place today. Overall, SIB client returns on investment fees and expenses have declined substantially over the last 5 to 6 years. We've gone from about 2/3 of 1% down to less than 0.5%. That's the only information I had, Mr. Chairman, and members of the board.
Okay. Any questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so I'll open it up to the audience. Is there any? Representative Steiner,
just learning.
I guess it's given some, you know, I'd like with this CD match program, you know, get some updates on that, and I think that committee, I think we've kind of outlined what I think our challenge is probably, you know, it's not so much, you know, for this board to, you know, look, just kind of keep track of what's going on and just another set of eyes to look at it. We got, I mean, truthfully, there's a lot of people looking at this, but the devil's always in the details. And I know the Treasurer's got a good website that you can find out information on this. SIB is getting, I haven't been on yours yet, but they're getting theirs redone, and we're, like I said, I think that transparency is helps us a lot, and but like I said, I think our challenge is to get this to be manageable so people can understand what's there, and then it comes down to using it, and that's kind of, I think, our challenge. So there isn't anything else that we need, Mr.
Hardmark? Mr. Chairman, one of the last times we met, we discussed our ex officio spot on the State Investment Board. Do we still plan to rotate that quarterly or twice a year? I just want to make sure if that's changed or if we're going to make that rotation.
Yep. I was going to go through December and starting in January, I was going to volunteer, I guess, or, you know, I was thinking if we, you should almost do it for at least 4 months to get kind of a feel of what, you know, what kind of the conversations are and stuff on it, but that's kind of what I figured I'd go to the one in December here.
We don't have one.
Try to rotate around, so yeah, we probably should have a discussion about who wants to do that. Go ahead.
So, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, there is no December State Investment Board.
Oh, there is?
So,
okay.
No.
Oh, but yeah, that's right. You're running that off. So, on December?
That's funny. That's funny.
Yeah, welcome to my world, dude.
So.
Makes you come to work every day.
Well, that's what I was saying. We get paid off in the mirror. You know, I mean, because it is good to be, no, not that, I'm just 200 miles southwest of here. But that's what I kind of was, you know, if Representative Craig, do you want to try to do January? And then
for that quarter?
Do you want to do that quarter for the month, right? Or do you want to, okay, do that, and then we'll just, you know, you guys, you know.
Did you give it using the authority to use the point? Is that how we do this?
Well, it kind of, I think the board, yeah, kind of, that's how it kind of wound up, is we really didn't put any rules in place, we just had a conversation about who wanted to, you know, I figured I'd take the first up to December here, and then after that, we'll take it through. So, because I did miss one meeting, and I did call Joe up, and he had another meeting too, and stuff on it, so it wasn't, but it is a good experience. I mean, you do learn, that's the problem, you hear this over, but you do learn the challenges, and you give some pretty good presentations and stuff, and you do get to meet some of the money managers, and so it is an interesting conversation. It is, so yeah, and we'll get, my theory is that Representative Craig wants to do it now, and if you'd want to take it, you know, like March or April, May, June, July, or something like that, and then we can just work it through that.
So, we have good coffee and cookies too.
Oh, yeah, there's coffee, yeah, they do bring coffee and cookies.
So, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, so the State Investment Board meets 10 times a year. It's the fourth Friday of every month. We generally don't meet in June and December. So, the fourth Friday of every month, generally it's...
Usually they got that gallon policy in July.
In July.
Trying to encourage people to take that in.
Absolutely. Mr. Chairman, members of the board, I'll be happy to distribute the State Investment Board meeting schedule for the next year to the advisory board members for scheduling purposes. Thank you.
Well, this is just a point of housekeeping. I'm wondering for future legacy board meetings, can we send out, like an invite to us rather than just an email?
Okay, yeah.
I mean, they tend to get lost. I'd appreciate getting meeting invite.
Yeah, no, we can do that. Yeah, because it does get hard to learn. And that's why now we got, because by statute, we got to give a report for the budget section in December, and that's why trying to find a date. You know, that's a two, that's why we, at least we've scheduled, got it down to two a year. It was there for a while, about once every other month. But we've got to have it in front of that budget section here, basically what we got to do. But yeah, we'll make sure everybody gets a, and I think I got your, number. Usually I try to call or make sure. I know a year ago, you missed, or no, the one in during the session, they did.
I'm happy to try to fill in anytime.
Well, that's what it comes
in the winter, let me know, I'm here.
Like these SIB meetings, that's what it comes down to is that, like I said, I hadn't planned on it because my father-in-law passed away, and I planned on coming up, and it was just one of those last-minute things and stuff. But yeah, and that was kind of the intent of the people that are in Bismarck here, because, like you said, it is interesting to say, and they're in the building there. So we'll just plan on that and move from there. So any other discussion?
Move to adjourn.
Second. Hey, sure. Absolutely. Well, yeah, you got.